Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Toby Miller. I'm sitting in for Ian Masters. We're going to be welcoming three guests today as we await the new sexenio in Mexico, which starts December 1. André Dorce Ramos will discuss what the incoming presidency might bring to the media landscape and the prospect of reform. Then John Bellamy Foster joins us to explain the global financial crisis and what it holds in store for the US and other countries. Finally, we turn to a new report on the media in the UK with our last guest. That'll be Bill Grantham. Joining us now is Dr. André Dorce Ramos, a lecturer researcher at the Communication Sciences Department in the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana Coajimalpa in Mexico City. In addition to those academic duties, André is also ombudsman with the public broadcasting Canal 22, Channel 22, and is currently working on a book about critical perspectives on media convergence, as well as collaborating with several local and regional initiatives for progressive change in media legislation in Mexico. Okay. So we're having a little difficulty getting through to André Dorce Ramos. And for that reason, what we're going to do is move to the person who was scheduled to be our third guest, namely Bill Grantham. Bill Grantham is an attorney here in Los Angeles whose practice focuses on the representation of a wide range of clients in connection with the development, financing, production, and exploitation of motion pictures, television programs, and other content forms. Bill has also worked as a management consultant, advising major media interests, as a media executive, and as a journalist specializing in the international entertainment industry. Well, Bill, thanks for coming in at slightly short notice. We knew you were going to be here today, but you didn't know you were going to be in quite this early. Welcome. And tell us all about this Leveson inquiry, so-called, which is just reported today. I actually just arrived from London about an hour and a half ago. And while I was in the air, the Leveson report released 2,000 pages. And I'm sure you've read every last one of them.
Every single one. There's an executive summary, an abbreviated version, which is a mere 56 pages. And as you can imagine, there's been an enormous amount of commentary. So we're still trying to wrap our head around it. But what this is it's an inquiry into the practices of the British press, the print media principally. And it derives from some scandals, which some of us may remember. I was actually on this show a few months ago talking about the one that actually started this inquiry, which was a Rupert Murdoch-owned newspaper called The News of the World, which hacked into the phone of a missing teenager who eventually turned up dead in an attempt to find her her voicemail messages and to obtain material for their rather salacious and sensational coverage of this terrible tragedy. And the public reaction was just so extraordinarily angry and antagonistic that Murdoch closed the paper within two or three days, fired a couple of hundred journalists, and this report was this inquiry was commissioned to look overall into the practices of the press, the criminality through illegal phone hacking and bribery, the relationship of the press and the police, the relationship of the press and the political class, and now quite remarkably quickly, considering the 2,000 pages, over 330 witnesses, several hundred written submissions made, they've now reported.
And some of the witnesses included not only, in a sense, ordinary people from ordinary walks of life whose privacy had been invaded, but also Hollywood stars. Hugh Grant, for example, was not only a witness, but was quite prominent, wasn't he, in various social movements that were trying to make sure that the government of the day took whatever recommendations came very seriously.
Well, if you think of phone hacking, and just to understand what that is, it really is a method of getting into somebody's mobile phone, getting to their voicemails, and listening into the messages that are being left for them. And well, I'm not going to reveal how this is done. Although, if you were to ask Piers Morgan at CNN, he'd be prepared to explain very clearly for you. It's pretty easy. And newspapers, not just the Murdoch papers, a lot of papers, were doing this very, very widely. And it did involve big stars, Hugh Grant, Russell Brand, Paul McCartney, Brad Pitt. It involved politicians, the wife of the former British Prime Minister, Cherry Blair, the wife of Tony Blair, royals like Camilla Parker Bowles, all sorts of great good and the celebrated. That, of course, gave a huge sort of dynamic, a huge push to the inquiry itself.
Now, and this inquiry was not about television, radio, or the totality of the internet. It's more about newspapers, isn't it? And in Britain, the newspapers are quite different from the way they're organized here, aren't they?
Well, the first thing is, you have an enormous amount of competition. I mean, if you're here in Los Angeles and you go to a newsstand, you'll see the Los Angeles Times. If you live in the Valley, you'll see the Daily News. You'll see La Opinion, and you may see the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, one or two other non-local newspapers. In Britain, you go to a newsstand in the morning, you will see 12 national newspapers of all sorts, ranging from, you know, the heavyweight to the tabloid, all trying to get your buck to buy them. It's an incredibly competitive newspaper environment, one of the most competitive in the world.
And because it's a physically small country compared to this, with really only one time zone, you're also seeing the potential for being a national newspaper, whereas here there are really only a couple that manage to do that, aren't there?
Yes, here there's the Wall Street Journal, which is specialized. There's the New York Times. There's USA Today, but that's really for hotels and places like that. There isn't a national press in this country in the same way as there are in other countries. And Britain, although there is quite a dynamic regional press in Britain, national papers are not only, as I said, very competitive, they are also major conveyors of news and information. That's to say, radio is very important, television is very important, as here, the internet is very important, but newspapers are still really important. Even though their circulations are way down for the same reasons as newspapers are down everywhere else. The top Murdoch papers sell over 2 million copies a day. There are other papers that are up over the 1 to 2 million sale. A lot of people are reading them. A lot of people's opinions and views are formed by what they read in the newspapers.
And the newspapers also have very distinctive ideological perspectives, don't they? So just as with Murdoch's property Fox News Channel here on cable TV in the US, where it's very obvious that it's pushing a far-right Republican perspective, so the Sun newspaper, a daily tabloid, has a particular position, doesn't it?
Well, yes. And the British press, maybe sort of 8 out of the 12 daily papers, you know, are to some extent or other conservative or right wing. And the left wingness of the remaining four is, you know, somewhat, it moves around a bit, let me put it that way. The ideological tilt of the papers is very important. It's also very important the stylistics. The closest newspaper market in the United States to what goes on in the UK, although much smaller, is New York, in the sense that you have the New York Times and you have the two tabloids. Tabloid newspapers in the British sense, the Post and the News, not like the supermarket tabloids. That's to say, newspapers that carry real news but have very punchy layouts, have very, very feisty coverage, and are also in absolutely cutthroat competition with themselves.
Yeah.
But you imagine that multiplied by four. If instead of three newspapers, 12 newspapers, that's the market. And as in New York, You have the New York Times, which is somewhat left-leaning. That can be it's overstated by the Republicans. And you have two papers, the Post and the News, which are quite right-wing.
And when we look at what this competition, in a sense, helps to animate in Britain, it appears to have been the direct cause, along with a lack of journalistic ethics, of illegal phone hacking of young children, older children, parents, soldiers, celebrities, royalty, politicians, you name it. And that's really what has driven this inquiry, named after this law lord who's running at Leveson.
Yeah, this very senior judge known as Lord Leveson, who's actually may shortly be promoted to the most senior judgeship in Britain. It's very characteristic in the UK, number one, to have inquiries when these sort of big brouhahas blow up, and secondly, to have big establishment figures, often judges, to lead them, and the remit was of the inquiry was to look at the culture, practices, and ethics of the press. An interesting thing, because I do not think in this country it would be even, it would be unimaginable for there to be a government-sponsored inquiry into the culture, practice, and ethics of the press.
Now, as a lawyer, you can fill me in on this, Bill. Is that because of our First Amendment to the Constitution that such a thing would not happen?
Yes. The absolutism of the First Amendment here really means that although the press, of course, is subject to the law, there are defamation laws. They're not very strong, but they're there. Journalists don't have any special dispensation to commit crimes. But the direct interference in in things like the culture, practices, and ethics of the press would be unimaginable. Here in Europe, including in the UK, there's something of a different view of this. It's not that the press is not free. I mean, one of the problems or one of the things that drives this drove this report is that the press is actually really free, and I think goes further in many ways in both in its spirit of investigation and in its overall kind of what somebody recently described as its feral practices than pretty well any American newspapers outside the supermarket tabloids. But in Europe, there's a sort of different constitutional dispensation where the freedom of the press, which is enshrined in the European Convention of Human Rights, to which most countries, including the UK, are signatories, is balanced against the right of privacy, which is similarly given constitutional force. And so where privacy is violated in this country, well, you say that's unfortunate. In Europe, they say, well, no, actually, we have to have a balancing act, and there is a right to sanction the press, for instance, if they take long-distance photographs of near-naked members of the British royal family while they're on holiday.
And we saw this scandal erupt not long ago. Again, I'm just letting you know, listeners, I'm speaking with Bill Grantham, an entertainment attorney here in Los Angeles, about a recently released report on the press in Britain. And I wonder if you could tell us, Bill, what actually appears to be the principal recommendation of the report or recommendations and what's likely to happen in terms of their uptake.
Well, Leveson goes into a lot more detail over parts of his brief than he does over others. The headline has been over the proposals for regulation of the press. Now, clearly, just the word regulation emanating from the state raises a lot of hackles. What what I should say is that part of the problem, as everybody has agreed, is that there was a kind of self-regulating system that the press used called the Press Complaints Council, which was run by most of the big newspapers, not all of them, was staffed by newspaper editors. And was the degree of unanimity that this self-regulation was completely useless is such that when Leveson was announced, the Press Complaints Commission just stopped work in anticipation of its demise, of its own demise. So what Leveson has done is he said, well, look, the press can't regulate itself. You know, they've been bribing policemen. They've been cozying up to politicians in pursuit of their owners' business interests. They have been invading the privacy of innocent members of the public. They've been telling lies about innocent members of the public. They've just been behaving in a really horrible way, and their self-regulation has been a complete failure. At the same time, Leveson is clearly worried about the idea of the state imposing regulation on the press as a slippery slope, a shortcut to a kind of degree of governmental control, which I don't think anybody would find acceptable. So what he's come up with this, he said, the press has to get its house in order. It has to come up with a new set of practices. About how it conducts itself, the culture of reporting, of redefining what its ethics are. And what we'll do is we'll give you incentives to do this. We'll say, well, if you set up a new commission which has real teeth and has, for instance, allows arbitration of disputes between readers and print media, binding arbitration, we will give you breaks. Like, we'll make the cost of litigation much cheaper. We will not impose punitive damages if you get caught out doing this stuff. The trouble for Leveson, the sting in the tail, is because this is, what he's basically doing is he's trying to order the press to introduce a new voluntary system. And he needs a sting in the tail for if the press decides not to do it. And that's his big problem, because then he then goes on to say, well, we actually need legislation to regulate the press if they refuse to do it voluntarily. And I think politically that's going to be the big problem. He needs the stick with the carrot, but the government, including judging by what Prime Minister David Cameron said today in the House of Commons, they may not give him the stick. So the real issue is the press going to self-regulate in a way that's meaningful?
And I should say, now that I'm living in London, it's extraordinary the extent to which, for example, German and also US journalists have been invoked again and again by the bourgeois press in defense of their right to engage only in self-regulation. It's been quite bizarre. Well, I thank you for joining us, Bill Grantham. I've been speaking with Bill Grantham, an attorney whose practice focuses on the representation of a wide range of clients in connection with the development, financing, production, and, dare I say it, exploitation of motion pictures, television programs, and other forms of content. Bill's also worked as a management consultant advising major media interests, as a media exec, and as a journalist specializing in the international entertainment industry. We're going to take a brief station break, and then we'll be back with John Bellamy Foster discussing the global financial crisis and what it holds in store for the US and other countries. Stay with us.